Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running the design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm Troy from TLC Creative Services, the T of TLC Creative, and I am based in Southern California.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in hot and humid Montclair, New Jersey.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in stormy Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, well, what's happening in the presentation world in our studios and stuff? Because I'm kind of confused by some of the news, but anybody else got anything to go with before I jump in? Or you want me just...
No, you're talking about 2019, Office 2019?
Are you frustrated, Troy?
I'm not frustrated. I'm confused. I still don't have the Office 2019 beta, which is okay. I've been so busy. I wouldn't have had time to load it and play with it. But apparently larger corporate clients can access and test it. I did have one call me, as I mentioned on the last episode, you know, ask me a question about it and you know it was released. So here's what I do know. The official beta release date was listed as April 27th. So right before my birthday, this thing released. I didn't get any birthday present. I was reading an article Heather Ackman pointed out, and it says Office 2019 is a standalone install. And basically it wraps up all the current Office 365 features that we've been, you know, everybody on Office 365 has been utilizing, like Morph is now in it, this and that. So it's an MSI or a standalone install. But I also read, this is just great, all this stuff you can read and get confused about. So what I previously said, Office 2019 was going to be subscription only. That is not correct. The perpetual license or the one-time purchase is an option, but not for everyone. It turns out when you do the digging, nobody really knows what's going on. A number of articles say Office 2019 will be a volume license to large corporate clients that are not ready to move to the cloud. Those will most likely be the ones that say, hey, you can just buy it as an install. You don't have to be cloud-based, Office 365-based. But the idea of it being, hey, I can run down to Costco or run to the Microsoft store or wherever and just buy a copy of Office 2019. It may not be available to the general public. So yeah, it could be a standalone for general public. It could not be a standalone for the general public. It will be a standalone for big corporate clients that just don't want to move to the cloud yet. But what is clear is that after 2019, there will only be subscription. This is the last time Microsoft is saying, hey, we're going to offer Office as a standalone install or a perpetual license. Oh, and then there's the whole, will it run on Windows 10 only? Here's my take on it. There is a 2020 year cutoff that only really geeky people care about. So obviously I know about it. So Windows 7 and Office 2016 perpetual, they kind of access the cloud. Well, that kind of access the cloud is going to be cut off in the year 2020. So my assumption is yes, Office 2019 can be installed on a Windows 7 or a Windows 8.1, at least until 2020 when those things get turned off. So if you do install Office 2019, assuming you could get it, unlike me, it will install on Windows 7, Windows 8.1, as long as you're before 2020 and you're willing to do all your troubleshooting because Microsoft isn't going to help you. There, that's my take on it.
Wow.
Everyone follow that?
Yeah, there's just so many weird things. Oh, here, I got two more good things. Well, I got a good and a weird thing. Microsoft did say that Office 2019 is being released for both Windows and Mac, which is good. And here's the really funny one, and I didn't know this until really recently. Office 2019 was announced in September, so a while ago now, at the Ignite conference. What I didn't know is that I read that the code name for Office 2019 was Cornflakes.
Awesome.
I need someone at Microsoft to confirm that because, you know, anything that's got cornflakes as their name might be a little flaky. Corny, and I'm not sure flaky. That was the, yeah, may not have been the best code name to run with for a product.
That's funny.
If anyone's listening and you're a little unsure of 2019 and want to hold off, just hold off for Cap'n Crunch. It'll be out in 2021.
No, what's the tiger one?
That's Frosted Flakes.
Frosted Flakes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Been a while.
Okay. Well, thank you, Troy, because now I know what not to do, I guess, for a while. I have been too busy to even think about it. I've been working on some great design projects, templates, and sales presentations. My news is presentation related only in that I use this tool every single day with my clients, and that's GoToMeeting. And they just announced today, or I received an email today, that we can record transcripts going forward. We could always record video, but now we can record transcripts. So say I'm too busy to take notes because I'm running a meeting, I can just print out the transcripts. I love it. I love that concept.
Have you tried it yet?
No, it was seriously.
How well does it work?
It's seriously. Yeah, right. What's the voice recognition? And with my accent, God knows what comes up. And seriously, on the phone, it's a hoot. Also, in other news, I am submitting my application for recertification as a woman-owned business today. In, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 episodes. I can't remember what it is, Troy, but Lori Collar and Nancy Duarte and I are going to be discussing women-owned businesses.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very exciting. Nolan and I aren't invited to the conversation, but it's going to be awesome.
It will be awesome. Hope you listen.
Cool. On the personal side, I've got 1 month left of training for my annual triathlon, which usually is not that big a deal, except this year I've been working on very little sleep because of my girls. So it's, I don't know what's up or down. I'll be up at midnight, 3, then I'm up at 5 to go swim. And it's just, I'm seeing every single number on my bedside alarm clock. I've seen it all every single night. Work-wise, I hope my client's not listening, but I feel like I kind of got tricked, and I blame myself, but I kind of got tricked into doing a Word project.
Oh, that's funny.
I always turn them down. I don't like doing them just for so many reasons, but it was a long-term client, and I had done an InDesign project for them, a sort of an internal guidebook, and worked on it, you know, the revisions and everything. And then finally they said, look, we just want to do it in Word so we can make all our edits moving forward, and we want it in Word. And initially it was going to be simpler, but then it morphed into a Word template and all different sorts of things, styles and everything. So, so we're doing that, and to be fair, I'm learning, about some of the, features of Word that I didn't know, just working on what's possible with things like, what are they called? Bits or parts, where you basically can have like pull down menus to insert pre-made tables. But anyway, we're always down on Word for so many reasons, but there are some good features in there that we'd love to see in PowerPoint. Mm-hmm.
Like styles. I would love to see their equivalent of paragraph styles. They don't really have character styles, but the idea of paragraph. Oh yeah. Some of those are awesome.
Styles are an easy one, but there are all these things like you can make pre-make headers and pre-make table styles and things, and then just have a pull down menu. So anytime you want, you know, table B or header F, you just pull and insert, and there it is. So that's kind of a nice feature. It's like a little internal library. Anyway, so that's what I'm working on.
Cool. Very cool. You know, hey, for the studio. Okay. First of all, I'm in San Diego this week, which is awesome to be close to home. I'm at a large tech conference where the presentations are on. I have an ultra wide screen. It's 3840 by 1080 for the executives. They get the whole thing. I do a 16:9 pip inside them for the outside presenters, but I also have these two giant, what we're calling avatars or diamond shaped screens, which I get to use for entrance titles. And then, normally they're just holding the logo of the event and stuff, and they're really cool but then I also get to use them as content real estate for the awards show night. So I've had a lot of fun kind of planning out some more just cool animation stuff that, you know, nobody will go, hey, that was kind of a cool PowerPoint, because no one will guess what runs it. No one will
know. Exactly.
But you know, Nolan, I have the exact opposite of you. I hadn't really thought about this. I have an InDesign project, which is pretty cool. And we didn't get tricked into it. We just kind of got backed into it. And I'm always good for an InDesign. So what it is we did a large corporate PowerPoint template for a financial, and it went over really well. So well that the internal Marcom department has requested that we develop 2 InDesign templates for their print materials to match the new presentation template. So we're doing a landscape and a portrait version, a lot of, preset page layouts, master pages, if you will, same color scheme. But what's awesome is just working in InDesign and having, well, kind of like we're talking about with Word there, having character styles preset, having paragraph styles preset, having, you know, just like it's just so freeing to go, oh yeah, that's right. We can do this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're doing this cool InDesign project, but it's really cool because we know the end result because they've already approved it all in Microsoft PowerPoint. So now we're just replicating it in a landscape and a portrait versions from other print materials. Cool. So it's very fun, very exciting. Normally it's almost always the opposite. You know, we get an InDesign project like, hey, could you turn this into a PowerPoint template so that those other people could use it? Like, yes, designer, we can make those other people happy too.
That makes me think of something I just finished up. I worked on a presentation, a PowerPoint template and a presentation for a small startup. And they had this really dorky logo and I was going to work with it. It was, you know, they had no quality. It was really bad. I'm sure you've seen these companies can't afford to get a high quality logo or something. But anyway, as I was building the template, they had this icon built to represent their process and their company. It was beautiful. The colors were excellent. The quality was wonderful. And I just, this is awful. I mean, for the people who pay hundreds of thousands and maybe millions of dollars to have their logos designed, I ended up designing a logo for this company and was able to then work. So I started it in PowerPoint, and then I was able to go back into InDesign and create a real logo from them. And they're using it. I mean, they've adopted it company wide and it looks much
better. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's backward, but...
All right, here we go. This is, well, PowerPoint templates. They're a big topic. We get to work with them and create them on a daily basis. So the three of us, we have the benefit of being surrounded by the nuances of PowerPoint templates all the time. As we went through conversation topic ideas for a podcast, it was easy to see it was too big of a topic for one, a small group, and two, for just one podcast. So we have a two-part PowerPoint template series. For part one, this episode, we have a virtual conversation with some presentation design experts who we asked for the input on 10 PowerPoint-related questions. And then our next episode, part two of the PowerPoint template series, is also one not to miss, and it'll be one to bookmark for future reference because we have an in-depth conversation about PowerPoint templates with the two that literally wrote the book on templates, Julie Terberg and Echo Swinford. So without further delay, let's get started with this virtual conversation on PowerPoint templates.
This is Lori Collar from TLC Creative Services, located near San Diego. I'm the L in TLC, and aside from the fun I have building presentations, I serve as creative director and resident problem solver in addition to my roles in managing the company.
So, hi, my name is Chantal Bossé. I'm from Chabas. I'm based in Shefford. It's about an hour away from Montreal in Quebec, Canada, and I'm a presentation professional and speaker coach.
Okay, I'm Rick Bratsnyder. I'm in the Silicon Valley, California, and best way to describe me is a PowerPoint troublemaker. I'm usually pretty disruptive in environments. I don't take a lot of contracts. I only take contracts with people I think are cool or have a neat problem. And usually we change just about everything they're doing about presenting, and they at the end, they like it, and they pay me for it.
I'll start with our first question to get everyone's input on. How do you summarize the purpose of a real, and I mean real, PowerPoint template?
PowerPoint templates, there's two ways to look at it. There's intent, and then there's the real world. And the intent of a PowerPoint template is to keep the user from looking stupid. But the user has a great ability to make themselves look stupid, and unfortunately PowerPoint doesn't stop them well enough. So to explain that a little bit, a template is really a designer in PowerPoint, and the designer knows what looks good together, and they will give you defaults. If you bring a designer into your home to paint the walls, they'll do accent walls, they'll do make sure everything works right together, and all your walls and your ceiling and your bits of wood around the edges of doorways, they'll all look great. And then you come in and you bring in the most god-awful furniture. And so it just doesn't look designed at all. And so PowerPoint tries to control a little bit of what you bring in to the background design. Most people think of a template as a background, right? It's the thing that's underneath their text. Maybe there is some swirly stuff, or there's a glow or a starburst, or, you know, we can get really awful. And then they put their stuff in on top of that, and PowerPoint decides you're doing text, you're going to be this color. You're going to be doing a rectangle, you're going to do this color, and it's going to have this type of a border. And the colors are all preset. Unfortunately, PowerPoint makes it really easy to override any of those choices. And people typically don't understand that they can adjust the template before they start adjusting their content. And that's when they end up looking stupid, you know? So because PowerPoint's so easy to use and doesn't lock people out of those choices, people tend to stray from design and end up with a lot of ugly PowerPoints out there in the world.
I'd say the purpose is to maintain consistency and ease of use and efficiency on the part of users.
I think a template's purpose is twofold. From the perspective of a corporate, branded, or business template, first, I think a template should contain the proper branding and look and feel of that business. The template should either be an accurate reflection of the company's current style guide, or the template should encompass the creative direction or branding, if you will, of the event or special product launch, for example. Second, I think a template should be easy to use, clear, and designed in such a way as to aid the user in producing a presentation with good design and consistency.
Okay, the purpose of a PowerPoint template is to make sure that the users have an easy to use, functional template so that they can, on an ongoing basis, be consistent with design and messaging. And I say that mostly from a corporate perspective because I work on corporate templates.
Well, a good template is really the best way to standardize the look of presentations in a company and, of course, to save a lot of time for presentation design time, so to speak.
Next, we want to ask everyone, what is your process for developing templates? Mostly kind of a general overview of how you approach a PowerPoint template from gathering the specifications to the design phase to proofing and the final deliverable.
Well, generally speaking, I start by asking a lot of questions. So what the client has available, if they have any ideas of what they want to change or things that they're looking for. And then comes some questions about venues they usually present in. So I can assess font size, lighting, evaluation of the room, aspect ratio they use, corporate colors and logos, versions of PowerPoint they use in their company. So that's for the question part. And from that brief, I usually produce a first version, sometimes a second version, depending on what we agreed upon. It's to be approved by not more than 2 and 3 people, because if the team is bigger than that, it's way too long. So I ask them to get an agreement in-house before I do any changes. Then it's corrections if I have a first version, final corrections if I have a second one, and send the final deliverable for approval. That's it.
Well, it starts with basically giving a menu and options to the client of what's possible. Actually, before that, it starts with first talking to the client and finding out what they need. Do they really need a template, and what do they need it for? Who's going to use it? Once I gather that information, I put together a proposal that, based on budget and everything, here's what, you know, I recommend. But it also includes that menu of here's everything that I think you need, and then here are some other extras, you know, if you want all these other options either now or down the road. So once we agree on the scope, then we're going to take their content which hopefully I've already seen by this point, we're going to take, if not a specific set of boilerplate slides that we're going to incorporate, then a series of presentations that they've already created. So the point of that is that we don't want to design in a vacuum. We want to design layouts and template systems and libraries and things that actively address their type of content. For example, if they don't ever do any charting, we're not going to spend much time on that, if at all. But if it's all about charts and specific types of charts, we want to see how they handle that data in action so that we can create layouts and examples and all that kind of stuff. So we'll do a design proof of concept for them, which includes sort of basic color palettes and some layouts and slide treatments, and get buy-in on that from the client. Once they get buy-in from that, then we'll continue building out the whole template. So that's in a nutshell.
In creative terms, I start by talking with the client and I ask questions to get a clear understanding of what they want, what they need, and I probe for any special circumstances that I need to consider or work around. I really think this is the most important step. Then I usually sketch out a few ideas on paper, nothing fancy. And after that, I will put together 3 to 4 comps of title and content slides. Maybe I'll add in a section divider as well. And I'll do these either in Illustrator, Photoshop, or PowerPoint, but the goal is to get the design idea slapped together so it's presentable, but I don't spend a lot of time building or fine-tuning anything. After we present those initial comps to the client, and assuming we've had good communication, a comp will be chosen, and then I'll just start developing it into the real template following our, you know, we have our whole step procedure that we do that with.
So the idea of a process from a blank page is not something I usually run across in the real world. Most people already have a template, or what they consider a template, that they're using if they're at all concerned about this stuff. And if they aren't, they usually aren't seeking the services of somebody to help them. It's hard to break down the door and say, you need help, you know. So the idea that they have something already that speaks to what they want, and you start really from there. And it may not even be a template. It may just be, you know, they have a professionally designed pamphlet or designs that they've used for their logo and their colors or stuff. They may not have thought about it. Again, it's dependent on the size of the company and the maturity of the company. But typically starting with something they have, and rarely are you able to start with that document because there are just inherent problems with what's come before in their work. You know, the way they've set up colors, the way they have used fonts. And so it's typically you use that document as a guideline in creating a brand new template. And I'm just going to shout out right now, there's a Designing PowerPoint Templates book by Echo Swinford and Julie Turberg. And, you know, they had this guy, Rick Bretschneider, do the tech edit on it. So I did have a little in it. But that is the Bible for anyone who is going to do templates. That's everything. It's the best collection of data. Even Microsoft doesn't have a collection of data like that. I'm sure they just have this book. And Echo and Julie got most of it by bothering me with information when I was working at Microsoft. So they got it piecemeal from me, and then they derived the rest, and they got more from programmers. And it's the best for actually creating a template. Now that's the mechanical creation. You need to understand some things about color theory and contrast, and being able to bring colors into the design that don't conflict with the content, and considering the content as the eventual part of the design. So you don't create a template devoid of content. You usually have content in there, so you can tell when you're changing colors. The defaults, and I'm sure other people have talked about or will talk about themes. I won't go deep on that, but themes basically keep you on color design and will keep your content pretty much, unless you try really hard, it will keep the contrast between background and text or background and content so that people can understand what you're doing. So it's really, as far as the mechanical part, it's a little bit of a tightrope walk, because you have to make sure that you're not leaving stuff in the document that you hand off as a deliverable. There's lots of little things. And again, it's all in the book. Just stop listening to me and get the book. Because you have to do a couple of tricks that aren't at all obvious to get rid of like extraneous colors that get left in the palette, and just making sure you have to decide, for one thing, if your template is going to be, if your design template is going to be just a design template, or if it's going to contain sample slides. And that's really a good thing to determine up front. And most companies will want sample slides, because not only do they want the content colors and font colors and background colors, but they want specific layouts for different types of content. And the easiest way to do that is with a sample slide that their people can just reuse. So getting all this stuff into a document that is really, really, you have to treat it like a clean room thing, like in a science environment, where when you finish it up, you have vacuum sealed this thing, and it's going to be used from then on unchanged until the client wants a change, of course. But it's quite an exacting process to get to the final deliverable.
I often start with, of course, explaining the process that's involved in building a template, because it's an education process. But then when we start to get into the nuts and bolts of it, I'll ask the client if they have corporate identity standards. Again, I work in a corporate setting, or I create templates for corporations. So I ask for design guidelines that I have to follow. If there isn't any, if I don't have to follow any rules, then I need to narrow things down to, what do you like? And oftentimes that like doesn't have to come from a PowerPoint inspiration, but websites, for example, brochures they've seen, ads they've seen, TV commercials, things they really, really like that help me get an idea for the personality that they want to establish. Then I'll create from those ideas two or three concepts from which they can choose, and then I'll get into building the mechanics of it. What is awesome is, after we have a template built, I often like to piggyback it on with a real project, so that we can, for example, beta test the template, work out any kinks. I do have a test slides that I use, but I think the best proof that the template is working is to actually use real client content. We found along the way that we'll make a lot of changes to the layouts based on what real life is all about. And then finally, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, I include a 1-hour training, so to speak, to for up to about 10, I call them power users, but if the client wants more, we can do that. But a webinar to run through the template and to show them how to use it, to help them overcome their preconceived notions, their old habits about how templates are supposed to be used.
Okay, this question is not really about how designers develop a PowerPoint template, but it's fascinating to hear everyone's experience. So we asked, what is the most master slides you've seen in a single file? And then what is the most master layouts you've seen in a single file? Now, by master slides, I assume we mean actual content slides. So sort of template aside, I would say my own training decks can have 400 or 500 slides. Now, I don't always show them all at once, but they're there. So that's a lot there. In terms of master layouts, I've definitely seen decks with 8, 9, 10 duplicate layouts, or duplicate masters rather. They're basically all the same, but they've just been duplicated over and over. So, you know, individual layouts that, you know, well over 100.
Oh boy. I've seen probably around 132 master slides in a file, and I did count. This was for a consumer products company, and I think every time they copied a slide into their deck, and they do tend to pull decks together from like tons of different sources, I think every time they simply click the keep source formatting. As far as individual layouts, I've seen it in the 50s or 60s, and it's really interesting. A lot of times these are templates where you have your core 8 to 10 layouts, but then they're duplicated into multiple color themes. I get the organization, but it makes it really can make it really challenging to use and to sort through to find things. The other thing I've also seen is a bunch of layouts and then all those layouts duplicated a second time so that they could add a subheader underneath the usual header.
Oh, that shouldn't be there. Masters, that shouldn't be there. Well, in some more regular presentations, I would say I encountered maybe 2, 3, 4 master slides. And in some instances, I had about a dozen layouts in them. But technically speaking, I'm sure that some of our colleagues have seen way more than that.
Oh, I don't know. I suppose I've seen 10 master layouts. And when I, just to clarify, by that 10 that were supposed to be there. Yep. You know, most of us know that when you paste in slides from other presentations, the masters will follow and you'll add on junk. And you know that those masters are not correct when they have numbers behind them, duplicate names, that sort of thing. So anyway, I'd say 10 on purpose. From a layout standpoint, oh my. I'd say 50, 60. I know that sounds insane. And I've pushed back because there you have to really be a pro, I think, to be able to navigate through and use multiple layouts.
Okay, I'm going to give you an answer. I'm going to give you one answer. You're not going to be able to ask me again. Because I'm going to give you the absolutely correct answer. And that is, I have seen presentations with hundreds of master slides and hundreds of master layouts in a single file. But that's because when I worked on the PowerPoint team, those were the kind of documents that got used in the test environment to make sure that having lots and lots of these didn't blow up the file. It didn't make it explode, not make it big. Of course, it didn't make them really big, but... Because I get that question. This question actually turns into, what's the most you can have? And you can have more than you ever should want to consider putting in there. So I've probably seen more than anybody else you're going to ask because I've been exposed to the testing environment for this.
Well, what about this? And I'll include my answer to this question. But we're not saying that there is a right or wrong, as everyone has their own thinking. Clients have their own requests and needs, and Microsoft gives us a lot of flexibility. Do you distribute templates as a PPTX or as a POTX?
Well, I do both because many clients I work with prefer the PPTX files simply because they were not big companies with IT departments that would know exactly how to push the templates on a corporate network. And most of them were confused with the POTX format. And that required more training from me to help them place it in the right folder in their network or in their computer. So I've done both, but I know that a lot of them prefer the PPTX file.
99% of the time, I deliver it as a PPTX. Okay, and part of it is I put default tables in there, and although the reason originally was because then once you save it as a POTX, your default table disappears. I guess we've all learned recently that that's no longer the case and that I could save it as a POTX and maintain some of those defaults. I'll save it as a POTX if I know the client is pushing it out.
That is an interesting question. My answer would be both. And interestingly enough, I feel like the right answer should be POTX, but in reality, I often distribute them as a PPTX. And this can be from either a client request or just the fact that the client doesn't know what to do with a POTX and they're more comfortable having the PPTX.
The answer is both. And I'm still evolving on this, to be perfectly honest. But as of now, I do try, what I'll do is I'll deliver the full template with boilerplate and or sample slides as a PPTX. And then as the POTX, what I'll usually distribute is just the template with a couple of blank layouts as sort of the real stripped down version. And, you know, I know everybody has different philosophies on this. Sometimes I do away with the POTX completely because it all comes down to what the client can handle and wrap their heads around. And I did the POTX for a client this past year, and they just could not understand it. And I just explained it over and over and over, and they couldn't understand it. And I regretted after the fact doing it, but the horse was out of the barn at that point.
I can't recommend PPTX for one very special reason, and that is it's really easy to corrupt your template if it's a PPTX. It's almost impossible for the average person to corrupt the template as a POTX. And the reason, of course, is because if you launch a POTX, it creates a brand new document that isn't physically connected to the original document. It creates a brand new untitled PPTX. Whereas if you launch a PPTX, you're editing that document, and you have to remember the first thing to do is a save as your new document type. Now, there are a couple things you can do. I think this still works. You used to, in the Windows side, you used to be able to right-click on a PPTX and say open as new template. I'm not sure if that still works.
I knew about show, but I did not know about the save as a template option. That would be something.
Well, it's not save as, but open
as a template. So basically open as a new file that you'd have to save. You couldn't just hit save. It would do an automatic save as I'm envisioning.
Okay. I just did it. Basically, what you do is save a document to the desktop.
Got it.
Then right-click on that document.
Got it.
And select new.
Oh, new.
And you get an untitled presentation.
I'm doing it right now. And look at that, presentation one.
So there you go, it still works.
New is the same as a PPTX open as a blank as a blank unnamed file.
Yeah, create a new document. Huh. Create a brand new document from this one. And that might work with other document types too. I only did PowerPoint and Windows. I'm just kidding.
We also gathered everyone's experience with what page size or aspect ratio do you see most?
It's not what I see most, it's what I expect, and how that expectation is not being met. I'm actually seeing a lot more widescreen, as we call it, presentations than I really expect. I really expected people to continue to do the 4x3, 3x4, whatever it is, just because there's so much reuse of documents. Almost everybody starts a presentation from a prior document. And everyone knows that if you take, everyone knows by hard experience that if you take a 4x3, open it up, and then you change the aspect ratio on it, it really screws up your content. PowerPoint's made a lot of changes about that recently, but even people who've been burnt by this in the past don't even try anymore. So they know they're not. Very rarely will you hear an executive in a conference room saying, "Why aren't you widescreen?" You know, they don't even care. The idea that the people are doing it is kind of surprising to me.
Honestly, for me, it's, I would say 25% of the time it's 4:3, 25% it's 16:9, and the other 50% it's both. So it's really, clients, it depends on what they want and what they're comfortable with and what they want to pay for.
Sure. I think it's leaning toward the side of 16:9 now. For the longest time, it was half and half, and a lot of clients are still stuck to the standard. That's the language I use with my clients, standard 4:3 ratio. They seem to understand that relationship, because they've used that standard for years and years. And then I do say widescreen, but I always qualify it with a 16:9 ratio. And that's maybe 60% widescreen. A lot of clients are doing both right now as they make the transition.
More and more I see 16:9. It's becoming probably more of a standard, but I'm still surprised at how many people are still using the 4:3. And just on the basis that they don't like to have a larger width of the slides, but at least 16:9 is becoming more of a standard.
I would have to say 16:9, but surprisingly, I'm still seeing a fair amount of 4x3. From my view in this corner of the world, though, it seems that the financial or other really formal or businessy sectors just simply don't want to part with their 4x3.
There's no right or wrong on this one either, and it can change from project to project, but do you see the company or event logo on all slide layouts, some slide layouts, or none at all?
So, you know, I see them all. I think probably it's more pertinent here is what do I advise clients? And that is, I don't expect from slide one to slide seven that anyone's going to remember, anyone's going to forget what event they're at or what the company is or anything. And I think that people who have to have every slide branded are just needy and worried and need to break out of that and just start presenting their data. Because everything that's on your slide that doesn't have anything, doesn't have to do with the content, with what you're trying to push to the audience to do, to move the audience, is noise. And you, if you want a clean presentation, if you want a presentation people are going to enjoy looking at, you create beautiful slides and you eliminate noise. So having an event logo on the first slide or maybe the first two slides and the final slide, that's cool. But get rid of it everyplace else. Just don't, you know, you just look needy. The only caveat there is if your legal department says that you have to have some kind of disclaimer on every slide. And if you do realize that if somebody wants to use their slide, that's super easy to crop out or blot or whatever and get it on there just so that it can legally be on there, but put it in a tiny font and make the font. And this is one place where you want to turn down the contrast between your text and your background. So make it, it's on there, but dude, it's not screaming. It's not orange on black. You know, it's there for the purposes that the lawyers want it for. And it's not there at all for your audience's comprehension of what you're putting forward.
Well, I still see a lot of logos on all the slides, but at least people are more aware that it does clutter the content. So I usually have a discussion with people about logos and make sure I do understand their requirements. And we try to compromise whenever possible. But I do see a lot of logo fans still.
Well, because I'm involved in building the templates, I always encourage them to take the logo off of the content slides. And I've provided rationale comparing it to brochures. You know, you don't see a logo on every page of a brochure. I explain to them that I need that real estate for content. And that, geez, by the time you have an audience and you're standing in front of them, they better know who you are or you've done a really bad job of setting yourself up. That said, I always include the logo on the cover slide. I most of the time include it on the agenda and section divider slides. And then I always create a banner slide, a closing slide, kind of that last ad. Sometimes people have content on it that has the logo on it. Instead of the logo on every slide, I do think it's okay to have copyright information on it. And then there is that nod to brand.
For me, this comes down to, as always, what the client insists on. Now, I will try to guide them towards sometimes not putting the logo on, but it depends on their usage. So if they're the type of company that are going to be creating slides a lot and sending them around, they're a big company, if they're going to be printing things, I actually want that logo on there because I want those slides to be tagged to that company. I don't want, you know, it getting printed out and give it to somebody and them not knowing what company it came from. But what we will often do is we will try to recommend a very subtle logo bug, like, so not the big color, you know, logo, you know, in the corner, but a much, much subtler, smaller gray version of it. So it kind of disappears and it doesn't get in everyone's face. But honestly, most of the time the client's like, I want my logo. And we just do the best we can to minimize it and keep it out of the way.
So I think that as well varies. The majority of the time, I do see the company or the brand logo on all slides. But I think I've been seeing a shift over the past couple of years where the logo only lives on the title or the section divider slides, you know, those key core large slides, if you will, which I think that works well. And because that way the logo isn't in your face, you're not, you know, constantly bombarded by it. However, my thought is if there is a chance the slides will ever be repurposed or used in a one-off situation, then I would definitely lobby for that company logo to be on all slides. though I'd ask and suggest that it would be kind of small and nondescript, but enough that it's definitely branded.
Custom layouts are a huge feature in PowerPoint templates. Not every designer adds customized layouts to templates, and there is always different perspectives on how custom layouts should be addressed. So, everyone, when developing a PowerPoint template, how do you handle requests for custom layouts or modified layouts, specialty slides, or anything outside of those standard Microsoft defaults?
Well, we always do at least a few custom layouts. So those are generally things that we propose. And we try, you know, we try not to have a million custom layouts. So we, if a slide is really just going to be kind of a one-off, we'll just do it as a blank layout and just build it as such. But if we see it as the type of slide that's going to be used often, or that has imagery that they're going to want to swap out, it's easier to do image placeholders, and it's easier just to have that layout, built. And so then we'll do that. But we do, you know, I don't always hold to that, but we do try to keep a handle on how many extra custom layouts we're doing, because it just gets confusing for the client and the user.
Well, funnily enough, a lot of people I've worked with around here, they did not have any layout requests because many of them just did not know about layouts to start with. So after analyzing their frequent presentation needs, I did either adapt an existing layout or create custom ones because they had some very specific needs. But basically, most of the time it came from me.
I say bring it on. I think custom layouts or modifying a standard layout is great, and really that's my job. I want to give our client a template that meets their needs and is easy for them to use. For example, when they drop in a new slide, I want them to be able to see what content is intended for the slide and give them some good design direction as to where the content should go.
Well, custom layouts are like essential now. I mean, custom layouts were really needed for a long time by designers so that you could have design elements on the background and still have your content managed in a space that isn't over that. Like anything, they have to be used smartly, but the idea that we have custom layouts is just like one of the, you know, great unsung heroes of the last 10 years of PowerPoint. That's literally, I think it's literally 10 years. The modified layouts are just custom layouts. You know, that's just, you know, the idea that you change it. If you change all the default layouts, I think the real question is, did you delete the defaults? And that's always a bad idea. But creating custom layouts and, you know, putting those in, that's nothing but a service. And, you know, nobody is going to be upset about that as far as a client receiving something that just looks good. You know, the layout, layout is such a big part of design, especially in PowerPoint. And people who don't understand how layouts work, how placeholders work, and don't know how to work with them, end up looking like every presentation that was ever created in the sixth grade, you know?
Along with custom layouts, we received some great input when we asked, what about the right to left language, rotated vertical text layouts, those two really bizarre ones that are part of the Microsoft standard template setup? Do you keep them? Do you format them? Do you remove them? What do you do? I generally remove them because I've never found a use for them. And I was given the blessing by the template gods of Julian Echo that I could delete them. They're the only ones I could delete. So yes, I delete them.
Well, unless the company tells me that they do have needs for Asian language, I usually remove them because most of the people are just confused by those two layouts in there.
I had it beat into me when I was there never to remove those because of things that would happen to the presentation down the road. I've never really seen a reason not to keep them. I've never seen a customer confused by them. And if they apply them, it's easy enough to unapply or apply a different one. So, you know, I wish I could give you some sage recollections about secret hidden passageways through the Asian language rotated text stuff. But it's just one of those things that you never really know where a presentation is going to go. And once you've eliminated something like that from your presentation, it's near impossible to get back in.
Okay, so now the question is, those are specifically designed for Asian languages, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, because somebody else questioned, I was like, I don't know, that's what I've always been told. Now, here's my story that will go into this podcast. We remove them. They don't even exist in our base template we start from, our prefixes. Yeah, well, here's the funny story. This would be a couple of years back. I was talking to a person from Korea, and they were doing all the presentation work for their company. And I said, hey, well, do you guys use the Asian language, those layouts there for this and that? And he said, what are those? I opened them up, and he literally said, that's what those are for?
Nice.
I'm like, okay, at this point, if the Asians aren't even using it. Now, Steve Rinsberg says he sees it in Japanese use a lot more. Yeah. So it could be a culturally.
You realize your sampling there is woefully incomplete.
I thought it was pretty funny. Here's a person who's developing presentations at a corporate enterprise.
Yeah.
Millions of presentations over the course of that company. And they didn't know what they were used for.
As I said earlier, this whole area of templates and design is the design of the application does not communicate usage at all. Mm-hmm. And you really have to read a book. You really have to work with somebody who knows what they're doing and develop an understanding of why this stuff is there. And this is probably one of the more obscure aspects of that very thing.
I do keep them. Sometimes I will format them. If I need the space, but oftentimes I just cover them and cover them with a colored text box and say, do not use.
I remove them. And I kind of feel guilty saying that. And now that I think about it, a couple of our clients are, based in Asia. And so that's an interesting thought, but I've always removed them and I have never had to use them.
Out of complete curiosity, with an amazing range of answers, the question is, what is the number one thing you often see missing from PowerPoint templates?
Okay, this is going to make you laugh, but around here, I unfortunately see a lot of client quote-unquote templates that have no formatting on the master slide. Everything has been done on the master layouts, so no need to say those templates are really not efficient when it comes to time to change elements in the template itself. But yeah, that's the number one thing I've seen around here.
So I'm not sure if this is something that's missing per se, but I think it could be interpreted that way. One thing that I come across constantly, and I think it creates a large problem, is that where you have the main company logo or other key graphic elements, and they're not a separate element on the master. They're baked into the master image. And so what that would mean is if you go into the masters, your ABC company logo would literally be like a floating ping on top. And when you do that, this way, one, the logo or these key elements will automatically print. And that's assuming you don't look for and adjust the print settings, which I would think, we would want to do anyway. But the other thing is that then those elements now are available to layer on top of a slide. So for example, if your logo is in the upper right-hand corner and you have a table, you could now go back into your master, pull that logo and just position it directly on top of the existing logo so that the table tucks up underneath it. Or another example is you could animate an element from underneath the content header bar, for example.
I think my good answer isn't all that interesting, really. I think that there are things that layouts that help structure the thought of the presentation, the way it's going to be presented, specifically like tables of contents and agenda slides. And there isn't really a good one of those in PowerPoint. And I finished a contract with one of my favorite clients, and we really worked over their template, and one of the things they had been using SmartArt to do their agenda, and it was, if I showed you what they were doing, you wouldn't go ooh, you go what? So what I ended up doing was one of the worst things about PowerPoint is the spacing between lines. The control for spacing between lines is not, it has all the power, but all the defaults of working with it are just wrong. You know, you have the point adjustment control is a spinner that increments. I'm trying to avoid words like spinner. It increments the point size in far too big a jump. You know, it's like 5, 10, 15. I'm sure it's more like 6, 12, 18. But you really need to start doing like 2 and 3 to get good-looking spacing between lines. And especially if you're doing something where each one of these, there's like paired atomics, like you've got a time and an item, and then you want a little more space between the next two pairs. So I'm sure that sounded, that's me talking to myself. I don't know if anybody else is going to make, that's going to make sense to anybody else.
Usually if I get a template from somebody else, they haven't programmed the colors. They don't think about establishing the themes. And I use the term programming a lot with my clients because they understand that programming usually means coding behind the scenes. And even though it's simpler than that, there's an interface that we use, then they understand that that's what I'm doing. I'm going behind the scenes and I'm coding, even though I'm just setting the themes. So theme colors are missing and the fonts are never set. They usually keep Calibri in there, even though their corporate standards will say Arial or something else.
I see instructions sort of missing a lot because, you know, very often there's some complicated layouts or complicated slides and they want users to recreate them or, you know, use these layouts, but there are no instructions. So instructions can come in a few different ways. There could be a set of slides that explain how to use certain things. Or what we do often is we put little sidebar boxes off on the pasteboard for specific layouts or on specific content slides that explain, this is what the slide is for. This is how to achieve this effect. You know, you're going to have to, you know, once you insert the photo, you're going to have to send it to the back, things like that. So just a little, and sometimes it's just a little instruction can go a long way, again, in one of those ways, whether it's on the slide or somewhere else.
So let's wrap up our time with this group of PowerPoint experts. I have a question for you. PowerPoint templates have so many topics to talk about. Design, backend setup, usability, and more. Give us one of your favorite tips on developing a template.
I love this tip, but I cannot take credit for it. It came from our staff. But I feel if you are using custom fonts in your template, and I know that could be another whole conversation, I think an excellent tip is to create a hidden slide at the front of your deck. And on that slide, you're going to have your custom font as editable text and as a flattened piece of art. That way, your user, when they take a look at it, they're going to be able to determine right off whether or not they have the font loaded. And that can, of course, help alleviate so many issues down the road.
That is still linked to something I mentioned before. The number one missing thing in templates is start by configuring your master slide. Then you can work on the layouts.
Yeah, you can never, ever clean up somebody else's template that they give you. You can't troubleshoot it. The only way I ever feel confident in the way I can support handing off a template and troubleshooting for a client down the line is if I've started from scratch and I know exactly everything I built into it.
I'm going to give a new tip that I saw because I'm always learning things, and I found a client sent me their template and they asked us to fix it and do some things, but I had never seen this before and I'm now doing it because I like it. So in the title boxes for the individual layouts, by default they say insert title here or something like that, and what I've always known is you can customize that content, and sometimes we have done. You can customize that for any text place box, text placeholder. But what this person did was they had named the layout in the title bar, so you didn't really need the little sidebar, you know, name of it. It would say, you know, to content, or you know, org chart layout, or you know, three image layout right in the title right there. And so I like that. It's like right in your face. It tells you what it is. And we've started doing that.
Restraint. I think that, it's one of those things where PowerPoint has all this stuff that you can do to colors, to colors, gradients, glows, line thicknesses, and you know, real design is an exercise in restraint. That not only do you realize that you're creating the backdrop, nothing about a design should be up, forward, and in the face of the audience. That's the purpose of content. And restraint means that you let stuff fall into the background. It's just ambiance. It's a visual ambiance for your presentation. You restraint and complement, you know, you make sure that all the content related settings are being complemented by the background or vice versa. But the idea that you decide, hey, these are the four colors we're going to use in this, and these are the two fonts, and these are things that the presentation template kind of does, but even the presentation template has many more variants than just like four or three. And I think that you decide how your background is going to work against your foreground, the foreground being the content. And just make sure that you don't, you know, it's the old thing about when the Macintosh came out, you know, the old 128K Mac, and all of a sudden there were all these documents in the world that had 12 fonts. And they just looked like the most insane things, you know, it's on drug documents. And it's the same thing for visuals. You know, a visual should fall into the background and let the content, let the stuff that's really moving the audience take front stage.
All right, virtual conversation complete. For anyone, including myself, that develops PowerPoint templates, this is a conversation with a ton of great information. Thank you to everyone that participated. For anyone looking to do a conversation that is a virtual conversation, gathering different people, doing interviews, and then putting all the audio editing together after the fact, yeah, just be warned. It's a greater task than I was expecting. The end result, it is fantastic. We couldn't have coordinated this many people being available at the same time and volunteering so much amazing insight into PowerPoint templates. So thank you. Thank you for listening and hopefully enjoying the conversations here at the Presentation Podcast. Nolan, Sandy, and myself, we have a ton of fun doing this. It's always great to talk shop. Please take a moment, rate us on iTunes, leave a comment on Stitcher, SoundCloud, or whatever your favorite way of getting podcasts is. It is great not only for others to discover us, but to give us a little feedback as well.
Well, Troy, do you want to start with pro tips?
Pro and tech tips. Yeah, absolutely. You know, this time I'm going to go with pretty practical, but it's very techy. Airline mobile apps. It does not matter what airline, if you're flying on them, you should have a rewards account with them and you should have the mobile app. Well, as example, last week I was headed to Hilton Head Island in South Carolina. And although I boarded on time, the plane left the gate on time. We then turned around and went back to the gate and were delayed about 2.5 hours for some repairs. Obviously, everything's okay. Plane made it there. I'm okay. There was just some commotion going on with what was happening. So it kind of became apparent I was going to miss my original connecting flight. So I opened the American Airlines app on my phone, clicked the reschedule button, selected another flight, got my upgrade to first class confirmed, and then pretty much just fell back asleep while everyone else was complaining and panicking about their flights. With the later connecting flight, everything worked out okay. I had a very nice sushi dinner in the Charlotte airport. I arrived at the hotel in South Carolina after 10 p.m., which was not a part of the original plan. And the reason I mentioned the sushi dinner in the Charlotte airport, it appears that, you know, the entire area closes at 10 p.m. Restaurants, bars, convenience stores, it was all closed at 10 p.m. The only thing open, the hotel to check in and go to your room. So that's pretty much what I did. Woke up the next morning, got on with the project, and everything went great. It was a phenomenal show. But yeah, so there's my tech tip is airline mobile apps. make use of them, because I did not have to make a phone call. I didn't have to wait in line. I didn't have to be uncertain what was going on. It's just a great bit of, well, it's a good pro tip if you're traveling around to have those.
Sandy, what do you got?
Well, okay. First, I have a question, and I will loop this back to being a tech tip. Do you guys have heard the new thing out there that sitting is the new smoking? Have you heard that?
Oh,
yeah, in terms of health.
Yeah.
So the point is this: if you're a smoker and you exercise, you run, the running is not going to counteract the negative impact of smoking. And the new studies are showing that sitting has the same impact. When you sit, the average is 9 hours a day. And that makes sense. We have 8-hour work days. We drive, we commute, all that. Exercising does not counteract the negative impact of sitting all darn day. So I broke down and I bought a convertible standing desk. I bought mine from Monoprice. I've got a link in the notes. I just think, it's worth it. I do walk. I try to get my 10,000 steps a day in, but darn, I'm worried about sitting all day and I don't smoke. So my recommendation.
So when you say a convertible, is that like one of the ones that sit on top of an existing desk or is it like the whole desk goes up and down?
It's the one that sits on top of the desk. And okay. It kills me because I'm all about the aesthetic. It kills me to have this awesome desk in my office, and now I put this mechanical contraption on top of it. But you know what? You just have to weigh the pros and cons.
Cool.
Okay. Nice. All right. I've got a stock tip.
Are you making recommendations?
No, I'm not making a recommendation. I'm just providing the information that Dropbox, which is a company, a software that I could not do my business without, after many, many years, has finally gone public. I'm not recommending it, but we've talked about mm-hmm. Dropbox and also, I mean, one of the age old bits of wisdom of investing in the market is invest in what you know and what you use. And so mm-hmm. if I were to follow that, I'd be buying Dropbox because again, Dropbox itself has already been one of my tips, but, if you really believe in it, you can now, buy stock in it.
Cool.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. If you are looking for presentation messaging, design, or show site graphics ops that are real presentation designers, check us out at tlccreative.com, our blog, thepowerpointblog.com, and we're on Facebook, facebook.com/TLC Creative Services.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. And if you're looking for training or design services, presentation or data viz or whatever, you can head over to nolanhamescreative.com and drop me a line there.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.